Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
I hope you can all hear me. You can come in closer on that side if you like, if you had the windows open tonight. So, we have a new face, so we could go around with or at least new to me.
Wendy.
Jeffrey.
Yeah.
Mark.
Marie.
Paul.
Nico.
Karen.
Ellie.
Carolyn, sitting in for Angie. So, yep. Could I ask you, are you Doug Jacobson's son?
I am not, actually.
Are you okay? I thought I recognized a family resemblance, but...
Oh, really?
I believe I saw you at Coben's ceremonial.
That's
on
right.
Sunday.
I was there this Sunday.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad you could join us on Tuesday.
Me too. I'm happy I found out about this. I only live a block away from here, so...
Well, lucky man.
Oh, give him a minute.
The responsibility.
You're also sitting sashimi.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
A late edition.
Well, that's a little introduction to what we're doing here. On Tuesday nights, we're reading this ancient Buddhist text, Mahayana text, called the Vimalakirti Sutra, and we are in chapter 8 now, which is a lovely chapter. I feel very fortunate that we could talk about just before Sesshin, or shortly before. The family of the bodhisattvas, as one translation has it. So we're on chapter 8. That's the family of the bodhisattvas in one of the books I'm going to read from. And the other, in the other book, it's the Buddha Way. So both are nice translations, but I'm particularly fond of the translation by Thurman, which Angie has mentioned before, and we have studied before. But this time we chose a different one, was more readily available. It's always interesting to have two ways to look at things. It's sort of a premise of our practice, so it's nice to bring that into at least two ways. At least two ways. So that's what I'll be doing, if you'll... let me flip back and forth between books. I have some places marked so I can find my way. So that's starting off with the main one that that many of you might have. It's the Burton Watson translation in chapter 8 is what he calls the Buddha Way. And the way he begins is, the chapter is, at that time Manjushri, who is the bodhisattva of wisdom and the embodiment of that, he asks, there's this dialogue going on between Vimalakirti, the layman, who is expounding the Dharma to all these people who are bodhisattvas and others, gods, goddesses. So there's this ongoing dialogue, which it picks up this time with Manjushri, although he also has been talking with Shariputra, who was the one of the first disciples of the Buddha from the very earliest times, and having this dialogue about what it is to manifest, to be in the Buddha Way, to practice, let's say, to practice. And Manjushri starts, how does the bodhisattva go about mastering the Buddha Way? Which I must say right away when I read that translation, I thought, that's a kind of an odd choice of words, because it's not so much, in my understanding, about mastering the Buddha Way. Dharma practice, the bodhisattva way, is it's not It's not a something that something you train for and achieve like the Olympics, like mastering something, you know. At least that's my take on it. It's and actually from the Greek practice or practicing is it means experiencing, entering into and going through an action, an actual thing in the world. So that's even from a different tradition, the Greek tradition, but it fits very well with what I understand of is the Buddha way. In a way, I think of this particularly as we'll see through this chapter. It's quite long and there's a beautiful poem, so I've had to select, and I'll keep an eye on the time to make sure we don't get carried away, because the poem is very beautiful, and I love reading poetry, so I've made some selections. But this text, especially, I feel, it's sort of the Buddha way is about saturating oneself in practice, steeping oneself. A metaphor Angie used to use was, or a simile was, like, practice is like being in the soup pot. You just, and that's what practice, especially together, which we just are participating in tonight. We're all here. We all have our roll, the onion, the carrot, the celery, the thyme, the whatever. And we just sit quietly and steep ourselves. And, you know, something happens. Just like when you make a soup, something happens when you put the ingredients together. Of course, they have to be the right ingredients. So that's part of why we study things like this, the Buddha way, and why we practice. So I wanted to read just a bit of how Thurman starts out. He calls, as I said, this chapter the family of the Tathagatas. So the family, I said the Bodhisattvas, but this is the family of those who have understood the way, and it's also a way that that Buddha himself is characterized. Thus come, thus gone. So more of a process than Buddha is awakened one, but what he called himself was Tathagata, thus come, thus gone, referring to more of a process, a movement, rather than a fixed entity. And his opening paragraph is, then the Crown Prince Manjushri said to Ichavi Vimalakirti, which is layman Vimalakirti, noble sir, how does the Bodhisattva follow the way to attain the qualities of Buddha? And I think that's it's more resonant with what we're doing in our practice. It's not mastering the Buddha way, but how can you give us some pointers how to follow the way so that we can attain? Even attain is a little strong. It's really we uncover the Buddha way. We discover the Buddha way for ourselves. So I'll be referring back to Mr. Thurmond, who has a really wonderful translation in a lot of ways, especially in the poetry. I don't agree with all the word choices, of course, but but he's really great in the poetry particularly, and that's what I'll be mostly reading from. So, and why I'm concentrating on the poetry more is because we've gone over, those of us who've been here before, quite a bit of Vimalakirti as the logician, the one who is really smart and confounds all the disciples, asking them these logical or questions that can't be, that you just wrap your head around, sort of philosophical questions, paradoxical questions sometimes. And so let's see where it is. So he gets Manjushri and Shariputta through his logic throughout. So far, it seems it's kind of a little play almost, or a drama, a story you could follow along. And so there's this back and forth and drama, and he sometimes they ask questions that are difficult, but he seems at this point in the story, in the drama, to have convinced them that to accept that the reality we inhabit is imperfect as it is liberation itself. That's one way to put what Vimalakirti's message of non-duality is. That the very reality we live in, imperfect as it is liberation itself. And that means the world that we inhabit with its wars, its politicians, its terrorism, its global climate change, everything that's that we could wish, that we do wish, and work for in our ways, would be different, is actually the ground. It is liberation itself. So the question is, of course, how can we act in this world? How can we interact with this world without just sort of whistling in the dark or singing, all you need is love, love, love. All that's actually a pretty, in one sense, that's true. But we have to really understand each for ourselves in which way it's true for us. It's not true as an abstraction. It's only true in action. I think the Buddhist sense of all you need is love is to love what you don't like and don't agree with, and to see that it's possible to have this, really what Buddhists are always talking about, compassion and wisdom for even things that we don't accept and that we don't understand. And how can we live with those things? That's an ongoing question. It's always a question. And as we know, there are always more questions than answers. At least, that's one thing Vimalakirti says. But the other guys keep asking him the questions. So, it's also love. It's a sense of that wisdom and compassion in a way that I always reminds me of the Buddhist icon, which is also a metaphor. There's images in Mahayana Buddhism of the bird of the wings of wisdom and compassion carry the bird of liberation, allow liberation to fly. And there are bird images where flying through the sky, liberation is flying through the sky with wisdom and compassion to aid in our awakening. And you can't have one without the other. They both go together. They're inseparable, just like the bird is inseparable from its wings. It can't fly without its wings. So how can we act? And particularly this chapter is addressing how can we act as bodhisattvas? How can we be bodhisattvas? So let's see what the ways are. Another thing in general I will say that I like about Thurman's translation is he talks about the bodhisattvas as they. And Watson uses he and him all the way through as a singular. But I think that's, I'm not enough of a scholar to know about the linguistics of the Sanskrit and the other texts, but certainly that is consonant with the whole enterprise of bodhisattva, with the whole story of bodhisattvas, and actually with the story as it has been. It's always a group. The whole Vimalakirti Sutta is always about people interacting, and big groups of people and big groups of gods and goddesses and all sorts of other beings from hell realms. I mean, it's really quite a dramatic story. So I've changed in my book some of the Watson things, and I'll read some of those. And I because I'm going to go through, Angie may want to pick it up and flesh it out more next week. I'm not sure, but I encourage those of you who have the book to read it, to find it if you can, online or pieces of it somewhere. So I'll go right into the poem. He says, at that time there was in the assembly a bodhisattva named universally manifested physical body. It's pretty wild. Who asked Vimalakirti, so he's one of the great assembly, layman, your father and mother, wife and children, relatives, retainers, clerks, people and friends, who are they? Your maids and men servants, your elephants, horses, and carriages, where are they? Because Vimalakirti was a well-off layperson, very well-off. So in sort of eliding the translations here, wisdom is the bodhisattva's mother, is the mother of the bodhisattvas. Expedient means their father. Of those who guide and teach all beings, there are none not born of these. Wisdom and expedient means. One way to describe expedient means without getting into textual references, of which there are many, so you might want to get into that. But expedient means are, it's knowing what the appropriate action is in the moment, in every moment that we're alive and awake. What is the expedient means? How do I act now? Dharma joy is his wife. Love and compassion of mind are his daughters. The good mind and sincerity, his sons. Final emptiness and tranquility, his dwelling. Then there are many for disciples, and there it's quite long, many things I'm skipping. The paramis are his, the paramitas are his dharma companions. So, and remembering what the paramitas are, generosity, ethics, patience, energy, meditation, zazen, and wisdom. Those are the four, the six things that really, that we recall that help us practice the way, discover our bodhisattva nature. Then the four methods of winning others are his singing girls. So the four methods are meditative states, and then joy, bliss, equanimity, and awareness of equanimity, joy, and bliss without being, that's the fourth state, without being attached to any of them. And these are all of these, this list that that Vimalakirti makes, these wonderful similes and metaphors of, come from the early Buddhist teachings. So they are taken into Zen practice, but they are in the original Buddhist teachings. And he goes through all of the many, many lists, which I'm not reading all aloud. So another, just picking out another nice one. The sweet dew of the law is their food, the juice of liberation, their drink, their bath, pure aspiration, and they anoint themselves with the perfume of the precepts. So these are ways that the bodhisattva discovers his bodhisattva nature. So I'm going to read a little of Thurman now. The bodhisattvas manifest birth voluntarily, yet they are not born, nor do they originate. They shine in all the fields of Buddhas, just like the rising sun. They journey through all Buddha fields in order to bring benefit to living beings. Yet they see those fields as just like empty space, free of any conceptual notions of living beings. So he also brings in some of the non-dual logic that he's been having in these discourses earlier, but puts it in poetic forms. They journey through all the Buddha fields in order to bring benefit to living beings. Yet they see those fields are just like empty space, free of any conceptual notions of living beings. So it's when we start being attached to our concepts, our thoughts of what things are, that we lose that clarity of awareness that lets us know what wisdom and compassion are, what expedient means are in every moment. And that's what he's referring to here. Then he also goes on to say, you know, how we can be, so going back from the abstract to like really being how we are in the world, us ordinary folks. They display sensual enjoyment to the worldlings, to everyone, and trances to the meditatives, to the monks and others. They completely conquer the maras, the personifications of evil, and allow them no chance to prevail. Just as it can be shown that a lotus cannot exist in the center of a fire, so they show the ultimate unreality of both pleasures and trances. Seeing that attachments to pleasures and spacing out are just other ideas or ways we have of not being aware of what's available to us to help others and ourselves. And then he goes through many more. They become courtesans and how they help beings through that way. They become chieftains, captains, priests, and ministers. I like this line. Or even prime ministers. So they do a lot of things to help living beings. And they don't give up. They keep on going on as he goes through this poem. I'll pick up a little bit more of Watson and then some. At times they show themselves old, sick, dying in order to waken living beings, so that they, the living beings, realize they are like conjured phantoms and gain understanding free of all obstacles. So when in Zen particularly we talk about no birth, no death, this is one of the texts where that picks that up. Who are we and where did we come from? What is birth? What is death? It's an idea, certainly. It's a concept that we have lots of ideas about. But what is it? What is it? So I think I'll just read the last poem and hear something for you. From you. So, except for some inferior living beings without any intelligence at all, is there anyone with any discernment who, having heard this teaching, would not wish for this supreme enlightenment or following the Buddha way? So that actually kind of made me laugh because I thought, well, anyone reading this is never going to think that they're some inferior living being without any intelligence at all. So there's time to hear what might have come up for you about these texts or anything else. Ellie.
So would an inferior living being, would that be an animal, perhaps? Or someone, because, you know, Shantideva and others have said that even chanting sutras outside to animals and birds, that they can hear it on some level. This is too mystical for
I think that... I think actually it's sort of a rhetorical device.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is what is in that is part of the Bodhisattva path. Yes, indeed, all sentient beings. So any sentient being. So it's Vimalakirti is ending by saying, kind of, I'm paraphrasing the poem now, but. No, this is so true. It's inconceivable that anyone would not get it. That's the way I interpret it.
I see. It is rhetorical.
It is rhetorical, in my view.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. It's a good point, though, because, you know, you can read that and go, well, what does this mean? any beings with any intelligence, when he's just gone quatrain after quatrain of including everybody. So we only got a little taste of that tonight. Paul.
How does anybody have enough time to pursue all these different things when shouldn't you just be sitting?
Well, just sitting is pursuing all the things, but
perfect.
It's not like... I mean, humans have the tendency to reify everything, even just sitting.
Oh, yes.
You know, so, I mean, but that's, I think that's, for me, it's the reminder and the beauty of many of these texts that elaborate how Nagarjuna and Vimalakirti particularly elaborate how we just don't need to be caught in up with thinking anything is the answer. That's when we get in trouble.
Right.
That's when we really get in trouble. So, good point. Thanks for putting that in. That observation.
Yeah.
Go.
So, in a sense, everything is a rhetorical device. The whole thing is a rhetorical device to keep you in a mode where you're considering the rhetoric, not in the negative sense of rhetoric. Rhetoric
yeah.
is a very
yeah,
good word. But there was a part in there. Oh, and by the way, both the
Thurman.
That one and Thurman are both available online if one.
Oh, excellent! Excellent. Thank you for that.
You can find the entire text.
Wow, really cool.
I'm not saying that one should just go ahead and download them from some of these sources, but they are available.
Some of them are PDFs, and I just don't know that because I have the text.
They are PDFs.
Well, in general, it's a convention, and it's changing, so I'm not sure of all the ramifications either, but in general, I think of it as been, and I'm not sure who does it. So, but to answer your question... Okay, thank you. To answer the best I can, what you brought up is, language, everything's a metaphor. Everything's a rhetorical device. But that's who we are. We are language beings. We are language beings, so that's what we need to respect and accept and find ways to be and allow our bodhisattva nature to discover. So ways to just live with that and be, you know.
I think that one of the things I find interesting is that on the references I come to about expedient means, that almost seems to... Because expedience also is one of those words that sounds like it's a question of convenience, and but that gives away the rhetorical nature of it, because you have to consider at each individual moment how you're going to act. And
it goes, the moments go too fast, sort of, in a way. It's part of Paul's question, like, how do you have time to do this? For Paul's point, the moments come so quickly and the situations arise so quickly, there's no time to think, even in language, really. The responses have to be embodied in a sense, even though we have language. And expedient, again, I'm not enough of a scholar. I have read a lot in the Pali text too, and some Pali, you know, basic study of Pali terms, but it's Pali and Sanskrit are languages that are just very different than English. So people make translation choices, and people go on and on about how Pali does not have any definite articles. Pali does, so one should not say the Buddha. Buddha is Buddha. And so there's on and on. But so I take your point, though. It's just wise to be aware that there's always another choice with language as well, even though language has limits. That is what we're stuck with, like two arms, to, you know. I mean, we're just, here we are.
So I'm getting a late start reading this, and I'm back where each of the disciples is coming and approaching. And is it just the point that each of those different, whatever their position is, they're all kind of stuck in their own way? Is that the kind of the point? Is each of them are pretty firm in their own, and the lay teacher is pointing that out.
That is the point, but they're representative of all of us,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
But there's a backstory, so there's a whole sectarian issue going on as well. So there's a whole... Buddhism was very... Buddhism flourished for its first few hundred, several hundred years even, in kind of a non-codified way. So it wasn't monolithic. There wasn't the Mahayana, the Vajrayana, and the Theravada. There were many different groups who had different understandings and practiced in different ways. And then the Buddhists had the great idea of getting together and making a congress, a meeting, you know, the word went out of my head what that was. Maybe somebody remembers, but it has a certain name. And there have been four of these. But, you know, when people get together like, oh, we're going to make everything unified, then sometimes it doesn't work out so well. In fact, if history is any guide, it doesn't. So then the people that, you know, I don't know the whole story. I'm not a historian really either, but I like reading a little bit, and then these different groups kept their own understandings and philosophies, and they didn't necessarily go along with it, and then slowly one group of groups sort of codified into the Mahayana with around certain teachers like Nagarjuna, and then different texts came up, and that was like already into the Christian era, you know, so 800 years after the birth or the death of the Buddha. So that's this. that's the backstory. But really, the important thing is that it's yes, it is about getting stuck in your view, mm-hmm. getting stuck in your view, which is also part of the early text. The Buddha said those are one of the last things to go: views, opinions, self-regard. So
it was interesting for me. I read some of them, and they really resonate. Like, yeah, that was a good point. I'm glad Vimalakirti, pointed that out. That I've really experienced that. And the other ones, I don't know what they're talking about. And this is really a vague. It's a maybe with. If I read it a few times, I'll start getting it,
It takes a while. It takes a while, and it's not even, you can read it over and over, or you can just read it and maybe go back and read it in bits and pieces, but it takes a while to get into. It's coming, it's a different style, it's a different language, it's a different way of writing. It takes a bit to get accustomed to it. Jeffrey?
Yeah, on that point, you mentioned that this group had studied the Vimalakirti Sutra before.
Mm-hmm.
Do you recall how long ago that was?
No, I don't.
It's probably in the audio archive.
If you weren't here, it must have been ages ago.
It could be in the audio. Great suggestion, Marie.
Yes, probably in the archive.
It could be in the archive, so you could look it up. And I'll ask Angie to see if she might have a better recollection. It was quite some time ago. Do you recall, Wendy?
I don't remember ever studying it.
Well, then maybe it was maybe it was a different era.
So the point I wanted to make is that, we study this again and again, and every time we come to it with fresh minds and open hearts, new truths and new ways of applying it to our practice, as you mature as you mature in the Dharma, it informs you in absolutely new and amazing ways. So.
Yeah, everything is always new. I think it's are there announcements?
Do you have any announcements?
Well, so as you know, on this Tuesday night, I'm not here next week, but I think we're okay with the new rotation with Karen on the Kukyo all the time, and then the rotating of the Doan. But the week after. No, we're going to keep you for a while. You're a little slow today, so I'm going to keep you for a second. Didn't mean to give that public feedback.
I can take it.
But the week after, many of us are gone at Sashimi, Nico, and Karen, and Ellie, and Carolyn. We're there Tuesday, I think, and I'm gone. So I don't know, open and sit, and then a service, I guess, would be optional if you have somebody.
Yeah. Does everyone have their own bowls? What do you call those?
Or are you making bowls? No, we're providing them for you.
I don't have time to carve those.
No. Oh, you were supposed to start at the beginning of August. Yeah, you're too late. No. So that's the announcement. And then there's Sashin, if anybody wants to come for a day. If you want to come up for a day, that's good too. We're not full yet, but we're close. I think that's it. Wendy, did I?
You don't need any volunteers for help?
Yeah, for the week of Sashin, is there anyone who could open who's not at Sashin anymore?
Yeah, we can work that out next week.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I just wanted to give it a heads up. Since I'm not here next week, I want to give it a heads up. But we would need Jeffrey to open.
Yes, I'm
because
okay.
You have the key, you have the key, you have the key in there.
Yeah.
So it's good. Okay. It's all good. It's all good.
Yeah. I think that's all I have.
Okay. I just want to say I brought a bag of books. Jeffrey's enjoyed looking through my books in the past, I think, in the lobby. I mean, you, I hope. I've been happy to give them new homes, and there's some out there, so please take a look and see if there's anything that you like.
One minute. See ya.